Hello and welcome to a new episode of Here is an Idea. I'm Chitra Sethi, Editorial Director at SAA Media Group. Creating self-sustaining and reliable human environments and habitats that enable the permanent colonization of space and other planetary surfaces, such as Mars, is one of NASA's space technology grand challenges. Now, researchers at the University of Arizona are aiming to address this challenge by helping overcome the limited ability of current technology to safely traverse environments on comets, asteroids, moons, and planetary bodies. Their patent-pending technology, named the Breadcrumb-Style Dynamically Deployed Communication Network Paradigm, or DDCN, would allow a flock of robots to explore subsurface environments on other worlds. Today, we'll be speaking with Dr. Wolfgang Fink, an associate professor of electrical and computer engineering and the inaugural Edward and Maria Kuenjian Endowed Chair at University of Arizona, about how a fairy tale inspired the name and what role can this technology play in future Mars exploration. Hi, Dr. Fink. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Chitra.
So, Dr. Fink, why do astronauts need to scout out underground habitats?
Well, that's a great question. As we all know, NASA is pushing very much for the return of humans to the moon, which are governed by the Artemis Gateway programs. And of course, at first, we'll be looking at orbiting the moon, then at some point landing on the moon, establishing a permanent presence on the moon. But of course, all of that with the look towards the horizon, which is Mars, where the same will be happening as well in the future. So why do we need to scout out underground habitats? Once you want to establish a permanent presence on another planetary body, you have two choices. Either you bring all your habitat material with you, which is a great amount of payload, very cumbersome, or you take advantage of things and materials you find on that planetary body to build your habitat. But there's a third opportunity here, which is to take advantage of caves or lava tube caves, which may already exist on planetary bodies, such as the moon and Mars. And you basically scout these out, go underground, seal them off if you find them, and make it real cozy for yourself. So the home is pretty much already pre-built.
Right. And how will the technology you're developing enable a flock of robots to explore subsurface environments on other worlds, such as Mars?
Yes, especially with Mars, we're not yet quite ready to send humans. So the early stages will be done by robotic explorers, such as rovers. And of course, a cave or a lava tube environment or any kind of subsurface environment is naturally a high-risk environment. So you want to have some kind of redundancies. You want to send in a flock of potentially expendable smaller robotic units and see how far they can proceed into the subsurface environment. What the DDCN technology will enable is to allow for the rovers to send the data, the pictures, the measurements, temperature, humidity, and so forth, to send all these data back out to a rover in front of the cave in order to transmit the data back to Earth. And another way of saying this is, since there's no cell phone network established on Mars or on the moon, there's no communication network. You have to basically create your own communication network as you go. So it's on the fly. As you proceed into the cave, you deploy your communication beacons to establish your own network.
Great. Can you explain in simple terms how the DDCN would work, for example, on Mars?
So on Mars, you would have a larger rover, for example, of the class of Perseverance or Mars Science Laboratory. And piggybacked on such a rover would be a few smaller rovers, which might be expendable. The large rover would drive towards the entrance of a cave or lava tube caves or skylight leading to these caves, deploy these small expendable units into the cave. Each expendable unit, each rover, mini rover, would have a stack of small breadcrumb beacons, as we call them, communication beacons, which are pretty much the size of a dollar coin with a battery. Mm-hmm. And they would basically deploy these little communication beacons as they go. And the deployment would not be governed based on time or distance. It would be governed based on communication signal strength. So as you proceed into the cave, if you realize that your connection to the previous breadcrumb is below a certain threshold, you deploy simply another one. And then you proceed further into the cave.
Interesting. And so what's the Hansel and Gretel fairy tale connection here, which kind of, I think, inspired the name as well of the technology?
Yes, very much so. The Hansel and Gretel fairy tale, as we recall, is when Hansel and Gretel proceed into the dark forest, Hansel left breadcrumbs behind in order to find the way back out. In our case, it's not so much to leave a breadcrumb trail in order for the mini rovers to find their way back out, because we don't expect them to do so. Quite on the contrary, we expect them to drive as long as possible before they expire to discover and explore the caves as much as possible. But it's actually for the data to find their way out of the cave back to the mother rover on the outside of the cave. That is the analogy. So it's the data finding their way out of the cave as opposed to the rovers finding their way out of the cave.
That's cool. So what are some of the challenges, Dr. Fing, in implementing this technology?
So some of the challenges are, first of all, from an operational point of view, how do you get mini rovers into such caves? That is a technical challenge. Can be done in many different ways. In principle, it could be letting them down on a rope, catapult them inside, or simply also driving inside if the cave opening is accessible from the surface. The next challenge is the navigation and obstacle avoidance inside the cave in order to navigate the environment, because we do not know what it looks like. Lava tube caves could be more cleaned out, but if it's a natural cave, not so much a lava tube cave, there might be debris, there may be obstruction. So you have to basically negotiate that obstruction and get around it or over it. And the second or the third part is the actual deployment of these breadcrumb beacons. But that can be done by a very simple mechanism, such like a PES device we are all familiar with. We have your little treats, which you sort of flip out in a spring-loaded magazine. So in a very similar way, you can, in a very simple fashion, simply drop the breadcrumb beacons at the current location, and then you move on to the next location.
Got it. So where are you with this research, and what are the next steps?
So we have currently, over the years, based on the tier scalable reconnaissance paradigm, which my lab devised over 20 years ago, which talks about multi-tiered, multi-agent reconnaissance missions via robotics, we have developed a set of robotic platforms, such as a larger rover, not quite the size of a Perseverance, for example. It's more size of the Mars exploration rovers. We have also developed a prototype of a cave exploring rover, which we call the ICE, the Intra Cave Explorer, which is equipped with obstacle avoidance sensors and also light arrays, such as UV light, in order to evoke fluorescence if there's any fluorescent material, such as minerals or even plants or algae inside the cave. So we have these devices, which of course prototypes. It's understood that these are not going per se to Mars, but similar devices or similar platforms will go to Mars. And we have developed also the breadcrumb prototype. So we are now concerned with the deployment mechanism, as I mentioned before, and which is always the challenge for all these endeavors, is the systems integration, to have the mother rover, to have the small intra-cave explorer, and to put it all together to have a demonstrable system which you can deploy in a cave or in a mine.
Great. I have one final question. You know, you mentioned Perseverance. You worked at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory for 10 years, and now the Perseverance rover has discovered signs of flowing water and working toward returning soil samples to Earth. Any closing thoughts on future exploration of Mars?
Yes. So with the discovery of flowing water, that has been a long-standing question. There have been many scientists, planetary geologists I've been working together with who basically projected that there would be liquid water in form of brines, or so subsurface. Having flowing or liquid water, potentially having heat sources, localized heat sources on Mars, gives you a perfect environment for finding actually extant life, so life beyond Earth. And that would be an enormous discovery, because the longstanding question for humanity has been, are we alone in the universe? And of course, as a second step, once you find flowing water, and as I mentioned initially, if you have an underground habitat which you could actually turn into a permanent base, having liquid water or access to liquid water is, of course, a wonderful prospect, because you would not have to bring water with you, which would be extremely cumbersome, as I said before. So having liquid water, even if it's in brine form, can be, of course, purified, and you would have a water supply for a permanent base.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Fink, for being with us on Here is an Idea.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.
If you like this episode, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform or find the conversation on techbriefs.com. Thank you for listening.